asked for some research on that, and I haven't received any answers. I just assume that Lincoln High could contract with anybody as an agent. But then you got another problem, you know. But there really has been a lack of a communication between if that problem exists in other areas of Southeastern, like it does in Sitka, as far as the communication gap goes, you know, it's a real problem. They'll come in the community and they won't even stop in and talk to this group, you know. You know, they told me they're sending two people over like tomorrow, and they said, well, we'll be sure they stop in and check in with this association. I don't even know if they went over or what, but now they didn't stop in, so this type of thing. And I'm not saying this is going to resolve it, but at least we give them the opportunity to do it.
Any other questions?
We haven't heard from anybody in HUD, have we?
I don't think so, right? We also have these documents that Andy said were coming with Andy and whether or not they will have a bearing on our decision or not. Yeah, Pat?
I get the impression that what the problem is that Lincoln High Council has all the authority and all the money and just isn't reaching out and doing the job. Is that what it amounts to? I'm not sure.
I assume that's part of it, but I think probably a bigger problem is the fact that you know, that they've had a number of breakdown of communications.
Again, how many people are in the Sitka Community Association, and what's the price tag on what they want to do?
Well, they don't have a specific project in mind. Now, they're not going to try to preempt Lincoln High on this or other one that's going to go, because it might be another 10 years before that one gets off the ground. They did. They're looking to down the road. Well, this thing has shrunk down to just a small project, and there's going to be more coming along. Maybe it might be. We're dealing only in native housing, also, you know. So they're looking at the opportunity to continue on the program, but they want to have local determination on where these projects go and who would be involved. And there's certainly no guarantee, you know, even if we do give them the authority, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be successful in acquiring projects, but they'll be in a position where they could be competitive, and maybe HUD might decide that might be a better way to do it than through an organization that's not based in the community.
Dick, do you know what representation, if any, Sitka has in Lincoln High, how they operate?
They have people on the Lincoln High board, right? And I've been told that those people on the board themselves are supportive of this approach. Matter of fact, one of them, I believe it was, was his name?
Dick.
No, from Sitka there, he called. He was on the client. What was his name? Mark Jacobs Jr., I think. And he's on the Lincoln High. Matter of fact, I think he's vice president.
He was vice president of the Lincoln High Central Council
Local Chapter. As I recall, his testimony, oh, he favored the bill, right?
Dick, do you know, how big is the Sitka Community Association?
Sitka Community Association is a tribal governing body of all Baranof Island.
But I don't have any idea if that's 1,000 people or 5,000.
I suppose they're, whatever native population is in Sitka. I mean, they're governed by, you know, board of directors and then the executive director.
Yeah.
And they're structured just as...
Well, I hate to bring it back again next Monday or whenever.
I don't know.
But I would like to hear from HUD to see what they feel that there would be, if, you know, because this is only the foot in the door. I think there's going to be lots of others that are going to ask for it. If we do this. Huh?
If we do it on Friday.
Well, I don't feel too comfortable in trying to move the bill without Bill being here anyway. I'm not sure what his intention was. I don't know if all the committee wanted to, I would, but if there's any question, I think.
I do have, you know, some information on the programs they do are working on right now. There's a number of different programs that are community associations involved with. So they, you know, they have a staff and they have their offices and they're a recognized group.
You think that if we did this, Dick, that you'd be coming back next time and trying to get more people included?
Well, I wouldn't. Because, you know, the re- well,
well, premium would be.
Yeah, premium.
And no, if it does work, why not?
Yeah, I agree. Probably you won't know it works 5 or 6 years. Yeah.
But we're not saying that Clinkett Hyde, we're not taking the authority away from Clinkett Hyde. They always have that, or they're going to keep it. You know, all we're saying is that, like the A&B, the Sitka Association has that same housing authority for that one area, period. So really, you know, I don't think it's going to be that disruptive.
Yeah, Rick?
How many other communities on the island there would, could possibly be affected by this?
None.
There are no other settlements around the island? Just Sitka?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, gotcha. Mr. Jarov asked me a question earlier, and I didn't know the answer. Maybe somebody else does. Whether the municipalities, you know, have its authority. I sure don't know. Because, you know, if he did, you'd meet and wonder, well, why didn't Square City and Square City do it? Mr. Lyson said, well, this is native housing only, but that's not what it says in the statute. They have all the authority actually has, except to build state buildings, not least the state, which, you know, we took away. We did not deal with actually either anymore. And, so they can build low income housing, veteran housing, name it. And, so.
No, I have. I mean,
it says the authority shall have the power to enter into agreements with local government. Maybe that means. Yeah, it makes you kind of wonder why on an island like Baranoff Island, with only one city, Sitka, you've got to have two, I would say, governing bodies or something like that. You know, it looks like one would be playing a place of good.
Well,
maybe the city board is not used to mirror a Sitka.
Yeah.
Did they have authority to do this kind of thing?
To do what?
This low income housing and so forth. Did the city board have the authority to do this kind of thing?
No. I don't ever recall them wanting to get into the housing business. But here's a letter from the administrator supporting the concept. I had something here which dealt with that particular problem about native housing. And, my interpretation was it was only dealt with native housing.
Well, all I can say, Mr. Chairman, the statute that I have is, I guess, and I don't know yet, maybe there's some change that I don't know about, but it's settlement, which is the latest information, I think. Charlie, on this, this copy I have on page 193 at the top of it, it says, "The purpose and intent of the legislature to provide the means for certain native associations to form public corporations."
What I'm saying, Mr. Chairman, 1855996A is where we list the associations, right?
Yeah.
And B, and it says that, excuse me, that the following associations are given the authority specified in B of this section. You're going down to B, and it says they have possessing all powers, rights, and functions now or subsequently specified for Alaska State Housing Authority, except those specified with respect to the construction and acquisition of public buildings for lease to the state, or any subsequently specified authority which is inconsistent with 995 of this chapter. And then another place specifically it says, have the authority power to acquire, construct, operate, and maintain group homes, multi-purpose community centers, child care centers, and other community facilities. And then other parts of the actual authority that I'm looking at here a while ago, we talked about veteran housing, various other kinds, other than purely native. It doesn't say anything about native in this, in the actual authority. And so it says they have everything to the business of building, you know, like they actually used to do, build and lease buildings to the state, which was a way to get around the bonding restrictions, really. But everything else, they have all the powers they actually have, according to this.
But what do you think that, look, at the top of that page 193 above 1855996, where it says, mentions Native Association, do you think that limits it to Native Association? Am I missing something?
Oh, you mean on the regional housing authority?
Wasn't that word in it?
Well, I think that was missing from my package, Mr. Chairman. Maybe it's not. Let's see. Just now, I've got to get a second. That should be so just exactly what I was reading from.
Well, it was the same page you're reading from. Yeah.
Oh, he's on 1855995. That's right. Well, it is the purpose and intent of the legislature to provide a means for certain native associations to form public corporations with powers and duties comparable to Alaska State Housing Authority. It doesn't say only native housing, though. They got all the powers and duties that Alaska State Housing Authority.
I thought you were making the point that the municipalities would have the same authority.
Mr. Eliason said something about we were talking only about native housing.
Okay, now
that's not, as I understand it from the statute, they can do anything that actually can do except build a building lease to the state. And, you know, I just asked for the borough. The city borough had that same authority already. I guess maybe they don't.
No, I don't.
Any other discussion? What's the wish of the committee?
I think
I like seeing figures.
Next time it comes up, it's about 5 minutes, Mr. Chairman, after the number goes.
Well, that time we may have any break out before we can come to the
I think we do something.
What?
Somebody from Pheasant can be acquired.
Or anything else to bring up before the committee? In that case, if you don't mind, the community.
Take a little time and go through it, or you want to start right off with the formula?
Well, isn't it important to know the formula in order to go through it?
Isn't that really the important part of it?
I'd say it is.
You're unanimous in wanting to hear you, Jim.
Just one more second, Charlie,
Yeah, I missed one.
No, no, John Alexander. You know John, man?
Yeah.
Came by and dropped off a request for Bill, we got it, so I sent it to draft check. Isn't that included in the one that you've already got in?
Teachers already do collective bargaining. All this does is change.
Registry.
From Title 14 over to the employees, right? I don't know what that would do, I haven't really, got to read the bill. If you want to excuse it, you're the chairman.
I realize that,
I have no trouble yet using the bill, you know.
Okay, that's not what I'm asking you, though. What, that is not done on the bill you've already introduced, right?
No, A2 means that they would be able to strike until the judge says you gotta go back to work. That's what it means, let's see, the ed is public school teachers very clearly in there, right? Personally, I won't vote for the bill that comes up, but it's, that's what it does in the first section.
Okay.
See that, right now, they don't tell them where they are.
I saw someplace in my memory, it seems to me that some Charlie Parr version did that.
No, what we did was work on 453, that talked about the classified employees, that's when we passed here, we threw it, but I would say either they ought to have the right to strike, or you ought to give them binding arbitration, one or the other. Nonsense about halfway between.
But you won't vote for that.
Because I don't think the judge should be able to order him back. That's simple. That's why Carlson went out of line last year down Anchorage, as far as I'm concerned. He went way beyond the authority he had in his office.
Okay. Jim, pardon me.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Jim Rode, AA2 Representative Malone, who, together with Senator Sturzelewski and himself, asked that formula be prepared. This was done with the assistance of Milt Barker in Legislative Finance and others on the staff of the two CNRA committees. Our starting instructions were to see if we could devise a formula that more or less reflected capital spending patterns in Alaska, and to have that formula as simple as possible. We considered a number of approaches. You might have had varying amounts of aid per thousands of population, disproportionately large amounts for smaller populations, and then having the grants decline per thousand to reflect the higher costs in rural areas and the fact that you might have to duplicate services, and that to build any kind of building at all involves a certain high minimum cost that you just can't avoid. But what we have before you in draft is a formula based on relative population and relative area. I think population speaks for itself, but as to area, our rationale was that, first of all, particularly the more rural areas are going to have scattered population. So you don't have the efficiencies of having one water treatment plant, one sewage treatment plant for a given population. You're going to have to duplicate the treatment facilities as well, of course, as the mains. Or another example, if you're going to provide even modest library service in an area that has scattered points of population, you're into a number of buildings, And as I noted moments ago, there are your rented costs that you just can't avoid just by having four walls and a roof. Or to put it another way, if you're building a building, say, the size of this room, it doesn't cost normally twice as much to build one twice this size. Just another way of stating what is often described as economies of scale. Where we began, in fact, was the dollar amount of bonds approved to the municipality of Anchorage at the last election, $42 million. And that worked out to about $200 per capita. We're also imitating the formula for local roads and trails, which is based on relative area and relative population. If I could just take you through these illustrations. What is unusual about this formula is that for the first time in our law, this would adjust the aid on the basis of a construction price index, or what we call here a construction cost differential. We were told by the DOT that typically it costs at least 25% more to build a given facility once you leave Anchorage. For the purposes of these very admittedly very round estimates, we just assume that all the organized areas had costs identical to Anchorage, and that any part of the unorganized borough had a 25% higher costs. So along the top, you can see how the population gets adjusted by that differential. And mathematically, this just allows you to make sure that you don't have more entitlements than you have dollars. Under the appropriation, we've done it two ways, $200 and $400. And for the purposes of all the other illustrations, we took a $400 figure. And simply our rationale there was to get for Anchorage a figure that was very close to that last bond sale. Here it's on the next page, it's $38 million for Anchorage versus the $42 million that were actually approved. On the first page, we've set out the formula. You adjust the local population and find a ratio to your total population, do the same for area, and multiply times 1/2 the appropriation. And it's times 1/2 the appropriation because otherwise you'd be allocating all the money on population and all the money on area. So you have to have the final function be 1/2 the appropriation. As you can see, the way this falls out, at least in very round terms, is that the urban areas of the state would get slightly less than the rural areas. There really were two extremes that we might have adopted for growing up a formula. One would be strict need. That is, assuming we could agree on minimal, essential public works for a community, regardless of where it's located, we could devise some formula that focused on whether you have these facilities and in what state of repair or age these facilities were. But of course, if you did that, the entitlements for your urban areas, which have most of these facilities, and often in recently constructed, the entitlements for the urban areas would be drastically less than what you see here. By further explanation, if you assume that the useful life of a capital project is typically 20 to 25 years, and a given area, say Anchorage, already has a minimal number of the kinds of facilities which are provided in this bill, then Anchorage would only be eligible for 1/20th of the entitlement, because the aid that you'd be giving is just for depreciation to offset the wear and tear on the existing facilities. That's one extreme. The other pole would be to base the aid on relative tax effort, which would be some measure of actual taxes, whether they're property tax or sales, versus the tax potential of the area as measured by, say, assessed valuation or per capita income. Now, there's several problems with that poll as well. First of all, in rural areas, the costs of property tax assessment are said to be extremely high. The head of local government assistance for the Department of CNRA told me that they have a preliminary estimate that on average it would run some $200,000 per REAA to do an adequate job of assessment. And of course, it's probably required under the school foundation program, and is the custom by Alaskan assessors to update your assessments on a 3-year cycle. Of course, it's particularly costly in the bush because of the need to charter aircraft to reach a lot of communities. But the fundamental problem in using tax effort is that many of these areas have a very limited tax base. And finally, it seemed to us that it would be contradictory to the aim of some kind of formula based on providing some minimal level of public works in all parts of the state to base it on tax potential. I think that's the best way to end is to reflect very quickly the concerns that Representative Malone had that, as this legislation was drawn up. He sees some kind of capital foundation program as one of the three steps that are going to have to be taken if the state is going to increasingly bear the cost of capital programs all over the last year. The other elements would include a new look at the 6-year plan that was set out or required in statute 3 years ago in the 1978 session. Among the other problems with that act are a call for the administration to do a capital needs assessment all over the state. Well, the Department of Transportation has been very slow about it. But further, the instructions in the statute are very limited and could be interpreted as an invitation to draw up wish lists, in that there's no requirement that projects be ranked in order of their cost-benefit, for instance. Other things which might be considered but are not set out in the statute are the timing of projects. Clearly, schools are very urgent as to when they're constructed, but when it comes to convention center, perhaps a delay could be tolerated. And if projects could be paced out intelligently, it may well be possible to involve more local contractors and labor than if you attempt a crush statute schedule. And there's even another concern in terms of timing. I think most people here realize that during the construction of the pipeline, the state also attempted record levels of bonded construction, driving inflation in the construction sector as high as 25% compared to 8-10% in the years previous, and compared to 7-8% for the general level of inflation. And with the probable water flooding project at Prudhoe Bay, the possible construction of Petco, or even the beginning of the gas line, expected bonded construction of the state, plus the capital appropriations from the budget, may once again have a considerable effect on rates of inflation. But those are the kinds of considerations that he feels ought to be addressed in looking at the 6-year plan for capital projects. And he also feels, in common with a number of veterans of the Finance Committee, notably, of course, a present member, Representative Friedman, that perhaps it's time to rethink the way the legislature itself goes about the capital project cycle. One idea which has more than a little currency among finance committees would be a change in the authorizing language that would require members to submit their various capital proposals in the first session of the legislature. The executive would be asked to prepare preliminary design and cost estimates and have those ready for the opening of the second session. And it could be further provided as a self-denying ordinance that if you had not brought your projects to preliminary design and cost estimate, they could not be considered in the second session. So I think I'll end by saying that perhaps the real effect of this approach adopted is that it would mean that local people would be having at last the final say on the priorities, and it would also be hoped that particularly in rural areas the DOT would be pressed to do more planning on a regional basis than it seems to have found reason to do at this point.
Okay. I guess I'll start, Jim, by asking you on the cost, construction cost differential, 1.25, right? You said they're round numbers. Obviously, for example, a village in the Arctic would be much more expensive to build than one on the highway just outside of Anchorage. So how would that be handled?
Well, I believe this language in the bill that instructs the DOT to prepare.
So you use 1.25 just to illustrate.
To illustrate, and this they said was a typical figure. I mean, more common than not, but you're certainly right that it depends very much. And of course, it also depends on whether other projects are in the course at the same time. You can combine barge shipments or air freight.
A little pre-planning.
A little pre-planning. For example, you can phase things so that the same contractor can leave his equipment on the site and it doesn't have to be taken out and brought back in.
Pat?
Yeah. Why is it necessary to include the square miles? You know, I see a lot of some unorganized areas when there are miles and miles and nothing but miles and miles. What does that have to do with the with the capital construction needs with the population?
Mr. Chairman, well, I suppose your alternative would be to apply little dabs for every scattered population. Supposing we have an REAA with 4 or 5 villages, each with 600 or 700 people. You could apportion the money to each pocket of 700 population, but that doesn't take into account the fact that to do anything at all involves a certain minimum cost. and it doesn't take you at all to the question of whether some of these things ought to be planned on a regional basis. For instance, in an REAA, you might well decide that a certain village has been suffering a decline in population, and all the indicators are that it's going to suffer a further decline in population. If you're doing something on a regional basis, that is to say area, you can take that sort of thing into account so that hopefully you don't overbuild facilities, facilities that wind up half utilized because you didn't have any way of recognizing or adjusting for the fact that one village was going into a decline and another was growing. And that's a common situation in the bush. The number of villages since 1945 is half, and people are steadily migrating toward what you might call natural centers, transition, going around the map. You have Barrow, Kotzebue, Nome, Dillingham. People go there because they're attracted by the educational facilities and by the better medical attention. And anyway, our thinking was that area, or taking it by REAA as a whole, there was some chance to take regional factors and patterns of migration into effect. But if you're going to award the money just on the basis of where every person is, then you could encourage too many capital projects in areas which are in decline. Is this?
Well, I don't, you know, I can hear what you're saying, those very logical comments, but it's just that, you know, I can see utilizing a certain amount of area in your computation, but I just can't quite see that all that area in the North Slope Borough is relevant to the needs of the people, to, you know, directly relevant the way it is when you're more closely condensed in area. You know. Uh-huh. I can see some reason for leaning that direction, but I can't see the reason. The formula looks to me as though it's out of balance in that direction without justification for that acreage.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I admit that, you know, a lot of these things are arbitrary, and
that's why I ask why
the exact way. Well, it's the wisdom of the committee. If they think that area deserves no more than 1/3 weight, or 1/10 for that matter. But I, you know, would like, if I might, to stress again the problem going the other way. You are in effect giving the built-up areas of the state money to have added capital projects over and above what would be possible, and over and above what, you know, in the sense if you're just trying to provide a minimal level.
One more question. I would have been interested in seeing what the Massey Borough would have prepared. I don't see it here.
Well, that was impolitic. I'll get you an estimate.
Not even peanut.
Future capital of Alaska should be considered.
I was wondering, Kodiak wasn't there.
Right.
That's the alternate site.
Right. This, as I understand this, this considers facilities that would be built by, or would normally be considered community as opposed to state facilities. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
It doesn't include any state facilities.
Yes, sir. I mean, it does not.
Yeah, okay. Well, the reason I'm asking, I guess it comes back in a sense to Mr. Carney's question. You know, you're talking about a community facility in this village of 700 people, and the mere fact that there is another, that it is in an REAA with all those miles and miles and miles and miles between it and the next village of 300 people or something. No, there's no connection between these two villages, real connection. And so, you know, it doesn't, the area thing is very difficult to justify. I understand it's being used as a means of trying to get toward the economy of scale thing, but I think you'd have to look for some other kind of formula to use, because you really can't justify it at all that you want to build a recreation center in the village of X, which has 700 people, and 75 miles away, nothing in between except Tundra or Taiga, there's another village of 300 people which has a recreation center. You know, there's no connection between those two. And obviously, any sort of area factor has no meaning whatsoever. It doesn't mean a thing. It may be way too low, it may be way
way too high, it just has no relevance. I think it'd have to be some other kind of economy of scale factor adopted. I think Mr. Rose would agree with that, but the one it chose was just a factor to give it a kind of scale, but it had no real, doesn't really mean anything.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's largely the case, but this was done in the context of the local government bill, which has been proceeding in both bodies. And if one really does believe it's possible to expect regional government emerging in rural Alaska in the next decades, seems to me there's some merit in anticipating that in a formula that supposing a regional government corresponded more or less to REAA boundaries, and supposing it was providing library service. But perhaps I need to think about that some more. I think the fundamental thing is economies.
In terms of, you know, using this percentage of what it's going to be, you know, somehow.
We struggled with this. We simply could not find a way that for every type of facility, a library as compared to a neighborhood park as compared to water and sewer, that if you made sure that the entitlement was, I just picked these numbers, 200 for the first 1,000 population and 100 for the next several thousand population and 50 for the 4,000 mark, that was going to reflect the economies of scale actively enough. We just simply couldn't find a way to do that. But it seemed to me that the injustice was worked, you know, just as severely the other way. If Anchorage and Fairbanks, for example, are getting, as they are in my opinion, 20 times what's required to maintain the existing level of public works at this time, then we didn't think the air was any worse in the other direction.
All I can say is that Fairbanks is getting 20 times, I should like to know what it is so I could make all my constituents happy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what I meant is that if we agreed that, if we could agree on a list of minimal public works, and assume it were the case that Fairbanks now had those for its given population, then to give Fairbanks an entitlement that goes beyond what it would take to depreciate the existing facilities would serve no purposes, at least under the terms of that argument. But in fact, you're given money that, for example, here in the case of Fairbanks,
you could find any community in this state, including Anchorage, which already has all those minimum level of facilities it already needs, then I'd agree. But there's no such community in the state, to my knowledge. I don't know of one. And of course, I don't live in Anchorage, and maybe I'm off base there. Some of the Anchorage people can speak to that. But I'll guarantee you right 100% right now that Fairbanks doesn't have it. Just going by the list that's in the bill. We can spend several $100 million in Fairbanks right today. I mean, you know, starting today to get to that minimum level. And so there's no such thing as having a community that already hasn't.
Well, let's assume that.
At least we don't. I don't believe anybody else does.
If we could take a moment in time, say 15 years hence, when everybody was at the minimum level, or at least the built-up areas were, then I think the argument would still be.
Then the formula could go into effect for 15 years from now.
Margaret, and then Pat.
Well, the thing, in reply to Charlie, I think looking at this list, at least 1 through 10, Fairbanks has all of some of those, maybe not as many as need. Some areas don't have any of them. Fairbanks has everything on that list of 10 in some fashion.
I think the word that Mr. Rowe used was minimum level or something like that. I forgot the exact words, something like minimum level or whatever. We don't have a minimum. What I immediately thought about was not in the first 10, it was number, it was 10, it was 10A, service roads. Spent quite a few millions of dollars on service roads in Fairbanks, North Star Borough right today. And, you know, that was the immediate thing that popped in my mind. I didn't even look at the list. I knew that it was in there, and I just know that this thing is kind of short.
Mr. Chairman, detention.
One other thing I'd like to mention. Excuse me, Charlie.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
You overestimated the Chugach REAA by 9,000.
Mr. Chairman, the population number was taken from, was obtained by legislative finance from the Department of Education and then adjusted up by 25%. That's what you have to do in the form. The area, you mean the area?
Chugach, no, the population. Chugach REAA only has Whittier and Sepetlik, and there's no more than 298 people in the whole, both of them.
Oh, hold on.
And this looks like they include Cordova and Valdez and somewhere else in it. Just for the record, I looked at that amount.
Mr. Chairman, if you permit one observation, I am embarrassed to admit this, but on page 3, lines 3 and 4, I hadn't realized that service roads and trails were included among the list of eligible facilities. And in that case, that seems to me to make another argument for area. If you have scattered points of population that are attempting to tie together, it seems to me that area would have some relevance there. And in fact, the existing statute for roads and trails is based on relative area as well as relative population.
Well,
I agree that area should be a consideration, but it seems to me that what you need to do is to go back and come up with another formula that makes some relationship between the acreage and the population. In other words, a formula that says that X is considered to be a reasonable acre or square mile figure per person, an average of some kind.
You mean relative density?
Yeah, density relative to square miles as an average, rather than just taking all the total square miles. Because some areas, you know, it does need to be a factor, but some areas are totally out of proportion and others perhaps aren't. And I think that so you need to come up with an average figure that you could use, in other words, a formula that ties population and adjusted square miles together in some way. Might be it. Interesting way to try. Mm-hmm.
Charlie?
Nothing ever comes out simply. But as my father used to tell me when I was a kid, you know, there aren't any simple answers to complex questions.
There are, but they're wrong.
Right, okay. I think then, you know, and Neville and Mr. Road is right that I guess the area can play a part on local service roads and trails. But, you know, last I heard, a lot of places out in the rural areas didn't want any roads. And it instilled in me in the 6 years I've been here. And so, you know, you might have to do is go back and do the kind of figuring that Mr. Road has done and do it separately for each of the 10, or maybe more than that, 15 different categories. And then see what you came up with. Because as I said, the recreation center is an example I gave a while ago. You know, the area doesn't mean anything. Maybe it does mean something, but say for the roads and trails, if you're going to have them. And if the REAA wants to build a road between village A and village B, maybe that
because, you know, maybe that's applicable. Maybe I don't, no problem, that way it makes sense. And it wouldn't make much sense to be talking about community centers to say that the area of the place makes a difference. So you might need to form up each one of these, whatever items you're going to include in here. Another thing is, I just, one final comment. Way back in 76, I guess it was, I was chair of the education committee. At that time, the typical Bush school was, at that time, about $205 per foot. That was sort of an average around the state. Now, that was way more than, obviously, in 1.25, you know, figure than it would be today. And so, you know, the additional cost of building certain kinds of facilities is going to be way out of line above the 1.25. Other ones might be, depending on how it's handled, down around 1.25. And obviously, they're going to vary whether you're doing it in Antioch Island or whether you're doing it in, shall we say, Iditarod or EAA. I think it'd be refined tremendously before it'd be a reasonably equitable formula.
Chairman, just one comment that I was, when I talked to DOT officials, I asked them what the response of local governments was to the formula for roads and trails. They said, well, they're very unhappy with it, but they've been unable to agree on anything else to replace it. And it's very hard, but I'll be happy to get with Mr. Parker and others and see if we can't draw up something that reflects economies of scale. Perhaps for groups or types of projects. Bring that back.
Any other more questions on the formula?
Mr. Chairman, one other question.
Sure.
What, and I'm sorry, I really haven't studied the bill as carefully as I'd like to, because I got it yesterday afternoon, and I'm afraid it was a very busy day yesterday, until 10:25 last night. But what allowance, if any, is made in the bill for state projects, state-funded projects in the same area? Let me give you an example. We talk about recreational facilities. We've been to a number of our community centers, for example. And the state now, for I believe it was in 76, maybe in 77, we passed the Community Schools Act. And one of the prime purposes of that, obviously, was that school building could be used for things, you know, in a sense like community centers or recreation centers after school hours. And the idea was that, you know, particularly in smaller communities where your high school gym, if you have one, is, you know, it's a local recreation center, people go and play basketball at night and all those things. So the state, you know, and to some extent has already funded that kind of thing. And, you know, there isn't much point in duplicating the way there's no justification for duplicating. If you've got a place, a very small place, and where that facility, which we're already funding on the community facility, the community schools program, for example, is already, you know, serving that need, it would be pretty hard to justify another one. So I'm wondering, has any allowance been made for that?
Mr. Chairman, this never came up before, but you would hope that the regional councils, for example, in rural areas, would not build a recreation hall right next to the new high school and gym. But what really interests me by your question is the possibility of whether of a regional council wanting to put some of its capital entitlement in with a state project, or rather, proposing a gym in high school is coming in for the first time. I don't know, it seems to me, within the terms of the Act, that the regional council could approach the state and propose that that the state accept part of the capital entitlement of the regional council in order to make the gym larger or have showers added or something like that.
Mr. Chairman, I think it is relevant, and I'm not just throwing roadblocks here, it is relevant in view of what, you know, Mr. Rhodes was saying a while ago about the communities that already have a certain minimal level of things, right? Now the state has funded in some of these places this minimum level already, right? And the kind of thing example I just gave you. The state has also funded, for example, under the Village Safe Water Act, certain facilities. And if the money is required for cultural facilities, my understanding is Cordova wants one, they pay 3.5% of the cost. So the state would have, in essence, funded that kind of facility, right? And I think you would certainly want to have some kind of an allowance in such a bill for that, because, you know, to get any kind of an equity in this thing, which is what I assume everybody would like to have, you would have to make allowance for those. It's going to fund 96.5% in Cordova, but in Fairbanks only fund, if they ever have one, 75 or something, so maybe it's 80, it's a little much lower, because the bill was structured that the smaller the community, the less they had to kick in. Right. And I think that you need to make allowance for that sort of thing, too, if you're going to achieve any kind of equity.
I think that some allowance is made on page 4. The requirements for the development of the capital improvement plan provide that number 5, the possibilities for projects involving facilities having more than one use, that shared facility concept, is included for consideration in the capital improvement plan. And it would seem to me that in an existing facility, that monies could be used from the capital fund for the maintenance and operation of that particular section of the building, which is used for other purposes. And it seems to me that it could be worked out.
Hmm. I'm not referring to that at all. I guess maybe I didn't make it clear. I'm referring to the allocation of funds that a particular municipality or REAA or whatever would get. That's what I'm referring to. I'm not referring to whether they combine facilities. I'm talking about how much money they're getting from the state treasury in an attempt to make that equity, right? And as I said, I don't want to pick on Mrs. Branson, I picked Cordova, just when I happen to remember by having figured it out, it was 3.5% of the cultural facility. So it was a very small community. Whereas Fairbanks was a much lower percentage, and Anchorage even lower still, I think. And higher to the local kingdom. In terms of equity of state funding for a given area or a given municipality, you've got to consider that. Not just going to make any simple straight line formula type thing and the kinds and so forth relevant. Inequitable, you know, so.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Parliament, sure, I quite understand your point.
Okay, I'm going to make the point again. What's being looked at here, rather than the hit or miss clout, pork barrel, or whatever you want to call it, system of funding capital projects that we've had all along, would be changed to something which would be equitable across the state,
because it would be based on population and certain other factors. Is that correct? Secondly, it would let the local people decide essentially which capital projects they want. Is that kind of the basic thrust, the two basic thrusts of the bill? Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm not dealing with the second, letting them decide what they want, that's fine. I have no problem. That's fine. But I'm dealing with only the first one. We want some kind of equitable funding to replace our present typical legislative way of doing it.
Okay.
But that equitable funding has to include state mechanisms which already exist for funding and which may have been used. Otherwise, you've got a very equitable system in this bill, but it doesn't allow for the fact that somebody else, under a different law, for example, the Cultural Facilities Act, you know, that they've already gotten, that there's already an inequity existing, an imbalance in the amount of funds that they get from the state. If you add equals to equals, you get equals. But if you add equals to unequals, what do you get? You get unequals, right?
Right. It repeated.
I think you get life.
If you add equals to unequals, you get unequals, don't you? Okay. And that's exactly the fact. We have unequals right now. We start adding equals from this bill, you get you keep unequals. If we're going to do it, let's do it so that it comes out equal across the board. Or equity, that's what we don't like the word equal.
Which means the formula should include capital projects already in place?
Capital projects of the kind cultural centers, facilities is listed as one of these things, right?
Sure.
But if they've already gotten an inequitable distribution of funds under cultural facilities, then that should be balanced out when you give them their rest of their pot of money.
Chairman, let me see if I've got this now. If you want to find some way to deduct or adjust for the fact that they had appropriations in the past for projects of a given kind, or that they got too much money for projects of that kind compared to some other area, it sounds like it gets very difficult to judge them.
Well, all I'm trying to get at is what it appears to me the first basic thrust of the bill is, which is equity in the distribution of money for capital, or state-funded capital projects, or state, whether it's funded by grants or whatever. But the thing, that's what you're shooting for, as I understand it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I'm shooting for, is do the same thing. Where you've got other things that are not already, that under existing statutes, it would be different, and that has to be allowed for. Otherwise, you don't get equity.
Well, you change the existing statutes, isn't that what
That might well be. I asked if there was any connection, any tie-in between these and other things, and there isn't, apparently.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
this bill is looking for going forward. The others are, you know, in play. And this is supposed to be a change, so I would assume that we would go through and figure out all these other formulas and roll it into this one, or take them out.
That might be fine too. I'm just saying there's no connection at present. You see, and all I'm saying is that there shouldn't needs to be that kind of a reflection. So that what comes out eventually, if this should be adopted, would be an equitable thing for everybody in the state,
right.
Whether they live in Anchorage or whether they live in Kobuk. You know, that's fine.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to ask Mr. Carr. Do you think it would be satisfactory to you if you went through and made repealers for various kinds of
governments
so that everyone starts even?
You better talk to Mr. Duncan. I don't think he's going to like a repealer on the cultural facilities bill. But nevertheless, what I'm saying is let's make it equitable across the board for everybody. Now, on equity, I don't mean so many dollars per each person in the state. That's obviously not with the economies of scale and so forth, Mr. Rowe referred to as 100% right. Nope, I had no trouble with that. But we should come to as near equity as we can get it.
that would mean taking into consideration what else is already on the books that needs to be changed too. And cultural facilities is just one example that sort of pops out. Because as far as I'm concerned, my district, you see, is at a disadvantage there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I recall, it was considered going through and repealing some of these other statutes, but one of the problems is that they're necessary for the allocation of bond proceeds. And as far as we could judge, the legislature was not disposed to give up bond issues and bond issues for these purposes.
You mean that this, you mean that in addition to this, whatever it is, that there would still be bond issues going out for other projects on top of these?
Well, it's very possible. I mean, you can place in the statutes a bar to issuing bonds or even, for example, making special appropriations in the finance committees for any of these purposes. But all it takes is the simple phrase, notwithstanding the provisions of AS, whatever it is, and they've jumped right over what you're attempting to do. Mm-hmm. So, at least as we put this bill together, we couldn't believe that we could wave a wand and end all bonding in these areas and end all special appropriations in these areas. But it was hoped that as a matter of practice, and some rationality, people would find it harder and harder to argue for bond issues for these purposes or for special appropriations for these purposes if their entitlement in the local area was adequate to do what they were proposing. You would hope that it would be harder to sustain an argument for separate treatment, but, you know, there are no guarantees.
Mr. Rhodes been around the Finance Committee a lot longer than I have been around the legislature. I wonder if he really believes it's necessary to sustain an argument.
Well, Mr. Chairman, yesterday I said I believe the judgments of the legislature were righteous altogether.
Righteous what?
Are righteous altogether. But the arguments are made, even though sometimes the votes had already been counted. But it's not always simply a matter of votes. People do get asked why the community has not put any of its revenue sharing towards a project, or its federal revenue sharing for that matter. Whether or not they've applied to various federal programs and so forth. Proposals do get that kind of critique, and it does make a difference in the debate of the Finance Committee.
You have to a point.
Mr. Chairman, it's really difficult there to... I can understand Charlotte's problem here with some of this, but it's hard to, for me to visualize the whole state progressing on a total basis of equality and equalization. I think a certain amount of, or a certain degree of it takes place, particularly in the rural areas, based upon the needs and the wants and what the community feels that it could support. If you use these cultural facilities, for example, like I know the one in Kodiak, they're talking about a $6 million appropriation for a cultural facility there. Whereas Angoon came up with one for $5,000 to put in what they wanted there. And I think probably within the communities, I think there's a certain amount of equalization because people know what they want, what they can expect to support. And I don't know, it's really difficult to. The more I listen to Charlie, the more confused I got. I don't know, on some of the...
Sorry, I'm trying. I'm confused.
You know, but
all I wanted to say is that we want to get equity. I'm in favor of that. And I'm willing to make allowances for the, you know, extra costs of building in various places, the economies of scale factors, because it's a small place and not a big community. I'm willing to make allowances for all this. But if we're going to shoot for that, then let's go across the board. And let's take, that would also, I think, be vitiated, and I didn't realize that that was, and Mr. Rowe said it, and know that this would really not do it, because you're going to be able to still be able to come in if you have enough political muscle and get whatever you want anyway on top of this. You know, so what are you going to get?
Well, Mr. Chairman, short of a constitutional amendment, I know of no way to bar the finance committees from taking up a special appropriation on any kind of capital project, or preventing a free conference from putting anything in a bond issue. Yeah.
We don't always obey our own laws, it's true.
I think everybody, well, I'm sure Mr. Parker will remember, I'm not sure anybody else, but about 3 years ago we passed the bill which said it did be a resolution about the 30th day of the session.
Yeah, I just think of that.
And I don't really think we've complied with it since the first year we did, and that was the last time, I think. So we don't even obey our own laws. We passed the sunset thing, at least the word I have is that the Senate did not do a sunset on the Parole Board and the Bar Association this year. So we don't always obey our own laws. So any bill is likely not to have too much effect.
One of the advantages of a bill like this, it might lead some of the out the areas to look at it on an area-wide basis and come in with a proposal instead of just everybody who has an idea coming in. And maybe there'd be a little more regional looking at things. At least they'd make an effort.
Mr. Chairman, I'll offer a comment on Representative Branson's remarks. In my 4 years at the Finance Committees, I think it could be said that the rural delegations, and understandably, were preoccupied with the largest projects. It was the sum of money they had to persuade their colleagues to give up. And also, those projects are a lot more visible to people, particularly the most glamorous of all projects, bringing television into the bush. And on the other hand, the appropriations for something that I would consider very basic, such as the Safe Village Safe Water Act, have always been very meager. And it's part of the hope of an approach like this that if you get all various regional leaders together, where they don't have to be visible to the legislature far away in Juneau, but where they just have to sit down and assess what things come first, that you're going to get a different kind of result than you get by having things filtered through to the finance committees in Juneau. And it seems to me a reasonable hope that that would happen.
Charlie?
Mr. Chairman, of course, Mr. Rhodes dealing with the second major thrust of the thing, which I said I had no problem with. I just noticed an article in a letter to the editor, the Thunder Times last night, I guess, about one district in the state. And whoever the writer, and I don't know if it's accurate or not, but the writer of the thing was talking about the first four projects, in this district were all in the hometown of the legislator concerned. And his own area where this writer lived was their highest they came was 18th. I don't know. So I don't know if that's an accurate statement. That's what the letter said. And so I suppose that with the community getting together in each some kind of area, taking the most important things might have some good effects. And I have no problem with the local decision making. That's the problem, prioritizing.
Okay, is there anything more for Jim?
I want to go back one final comment, Mr. Chairman. The risk of beating the drum one time too many times. That is what I said initially. If I feel that my district is getting a fair shake, I have no problem. Right.
don't, and I'm just going to say I can support it. The formula, whatever it's defined as bias, I have to feel, at least in my district, gives them a fair shake at this. Which is, I think, only reasonable. It's one of my purposes of being here is to make sure that they do. And so that would have to be a sine qua non.
Okay, any more? Thanks, Jim. Do either of you want to testify on this? Have anything to say?
Chairman, my name is Steve Van Sant. I'm the Assistant State Assessor in the Committee of Regional Affairs. The only concern that we had on this was on page 3, line 21, where it says the Regional Council should be composed of 15 members. We felt that if this were to be some kind of transitional type affair, that it should come back to 11 members like the borough assemblies and things. That's basically the only concern our department had on it, which I think was made aware, right?
Okay, any questions? No. Okay. There's nothing more in this, Phil. It'll be right across this morning, and we've got a teleconference at 1:30 in the governor's conference room.
I think maybe one thing that needs to be clear is that the teleconference is on Senate Bill 546, which is not identical to this. What happened was we were going to have them introduced together, and there were some problems in the version as it came out. They were very eager to get it introduced on the Senate side, so some of the problems that people may be raising may have already been dealt with in the House version of the bill. But we had to send the Senate version of the bill out with the public hearing notice, with the teleconference notice. So, in fact, some of the arguments, for instance, the fact that home rule cities are not dealt with separately in the Senate bill, may be raised this afternoon that may not, in fact, be true.
Anything else come for this? Okay, let's adjourn until 1:30 then.